care of herself. At the front door, he'd suddenly wrapped his arms around her in a quick warm hug. He'd said in her ear, "I care a lot about you." And then he was gone. So that hadn't helped much at all. Drifting apart because of Nick's long hours. That was such a cliché. The sort of thing that broke up other marriages. If Nick had to work long hours, they would just have made up for it in the hours they did have. She looked at her wine glass and saw that the level had gone down considerably. What if her lips and teeth were stained purple, and she opened the door to Nick and the children looking like a vampire? She rushed to the mirror in the hallway and checked her reflection. Her lips were fine. Her eyes just looked a bit wild and crazed, and she still looked extremely old. As she walked back into the kitchen, she stopped by the green room, except it wasn't green anymore. It was a small room off the hallway that had originally been painted a bright lime green. Now the walls were painted a tasteful mushroom. Alice leaned against the doorway and found that she missed the green. It had made people laugh and shield their eyes whenever they saw it. Of course it had to go, but still. The house was literally perfect now. Instead of being thrilling, that suddenly seemed depressing. The green room had been turned into a study, which had always been their plan. There was a computer on a desk and bookshelves lined the walls. She walked in and sat down at the computer. Immediately, without thinking, she leaned down and pushed a round silver button on a black box sitting on the floor. The computer whirred to life and she pressed another button on the monitor. The screen turned blue. White letters ordered her, "To begin, click your username." There were four icons, Alice, Madison, Tom, and Olivia. Did that mean the children used this computer? Weren't they too little? She clicked on her own name, and a colorful photo filled the whole screen. It was the three children. They were all rugged up in parkas and scarves, sharing a toboggan that was flying down a snowy incline. Madison was at the back, Tom was in the middle, and the little one, Olivia, was in the front. Madison had hold of the control rope. Their mouths were open as if laughing or shrieking, and their eyes were wide with fear and exhilaration. Alice put a hand to the base of her throat. They were extraordinarily beautiful. She wanted the memory of that day back so bad. She stared at the photo, and for a second she thought she heard the faint sounds of children shouting, the feeling of an icy cold nose and fingertips. And as soon as she tried too hard to grab hold of it, it slipped deftly away. Instead, she clicked on an icon that said email. It asked for a password. Naturally, she didn't know it, but as she held her hands over the keyboard, her fingers went ahead and inexplicably typed out the word oregano. What in the world? But it seemed her body remembered more than her mind because the screen was obediently vanishing, to be replaced by a dancing image of an envelope and a message saying, "You have 7 new messages." What inspired her to choose an herb for her password? There was an email from Jane Turner with the subject heading, "How's the head?" Another one from a Dominic Gordon. Who? Oh, of course him, her boyfriend, with the subject heading, "Next weekend?" And 5 from names she didn't recognize, all with the heading, "Mega Meringue Mother's Day." Mega Meringue Mother's Day. It made her want to snort with derision. It seemed like something Elizabeth, the old energetic Elizabeth, might have arranged, not her. There was also an email from Nick Love, with no subject heading, dated Friday, the day of her accident. She clicked on it and read, "Well, a lot of traditions are going to have to change now, aren't they? What a load of crap! Christmas Day will be different, whatever we do. You can't reasonably expect to have them for the morning and the night, so I only get them for 5 fucking minutes in the middle of the day. It makes perfect sense for them to stay at Ella's on Christmas Eve. They love being with their cousins. Can't you think of them for a change? This is all about you, as usual. P.S. Please make sure they pack their swimming costumes for the weekend. I'm taking them to the Aquatic Center on Sunday when I get back from Portugal. P.P.S. I had 2 sisters on the phone in tears last night about Granny Love's ring. Can you please be reasonable about this? It's not like you ever wore it that often. If you're thinking of selling it, you've really sunk to a new low, even for you. Even for you. Alice struggled to catch her breath. It was like being winded. The coldness, the viciousness, the dislike. It was impossible to believe that this was written by the same man who got tears in his eyes when she said she would marry him, who would crash-tackle her onto the bed and lift her hair and kiss the back of her neck, who told her when it was safe to look back at the television because the blood and guts had gone now, who sang all the words to living next door to Alice to her in the shower. And why was she refusing to give back Granny Love's dreadful ring? It was a family heirloom. Of course the Love family should get it back. She scrolled down and saw that Nick's message was part of a whole conversation that had been going on for days. There was one from herself dated just 3 days ago. The children should wake up in their own beds on Christmas Day this year. I'm not moving on this matter. Obviously, I want to keep all the same traditions for them, putting out their Santa sacks at the end of their beds, etc. They've had to go through enough disruption as it is. This is just another power game for you. All you care about is winning. I couldn't care less what points you win over me. Just don't win at the expense of the children. By the way, I have asked you at least twice before now not to give the children, especially Olivia, so much junk food over the weekend. I'm sure it makes you feel like a wonderful father to say yes to whatever they want, but they're tired and irritable every Monday after a weekend with you, and I'm the one who has to deal with it. It was May. Why were they even talking about what would happen on Christmas Day? Some imposter had been living her life. She was stunned by her sanctimonious, contemptuous tone. She scrolled down further and bitter words and phrases jumped out at her. May I remind you? You are so small-minded. You are so sanctimonious. You must be out of your mind if you think... What is wrong with you? Can we just try and be rational about this? You're the one who... There was a scrunch of gravel and a flicker of headlights. A car pulled up in the driveway. Alice stood up, her heart beating like a jackhammer. She pushed a hand back through her hair as she walked down the hallway toward the front door. She was such an idiot for not doing her makeup again. She was about to see a man who hated her. Car doors were slamming. The child was whining. But Dad, that's not fair. Alice opened the front door. Her legs were shaking so badly she thought she might collapse. Maybe that would be a good thing. Mummy! A little girl came hurtling up the stairs and threw her arms around Alice, her head colliding hard with her stomach. She talked straight into Alice's t-shirt, her voice muffled. Is your sore head better? Did you get my card? What was it like sleeping in the hospital? Alice hugged her back and couldn't speak. I don't even remember being pregnant with you. Olivia? She croaked and put her hand on top of the little girl's tangled, white blonde curls. There was sand in her hair and a crooked line revealing a pink scalp. Her hair was soft and her skull was hard. And when she looked up, she was impossibly beautiful. Smooth skin with a cinnamon dusting of freckles and enormous dark-lashed blue eyes. They were her own eyes staring back at her, but much bigger and definitely much more beautiful. Alice felt dizzy.
Oh, Mum, crooned Olivia. Are you actually still feeling a bit sick? Poor darling Mum. I know. I'll listen to your heart and be your nurse. Yes.
She was gone, slamming the screen door behind her, pounding down the hallway. Alice looked up and saw Nick leaning over to pull out stuff from the boot of a swish silver car. He straightened. Both his arms were filled with backpacks and soggy beach towels. Hi, he said. His hair seemed to have disappeared. As he walked toward her, she saw that it was completely grey and cropped close to his head. His face had got thinner, but his body was somehow thicker, his shoulders chunkier, his stomach paunchier. There were spiderwebs of lines around his eyes. He was wearing a green t-shirt and shorts she'd never seen before. Well, of course, but it was still unsettling. He walked up the stairs toward her and stood in front of her. She looked up at him. He was different and strange, but he was still essentially Nick. Alice forgot everything that she'd just read on the computer and the way he'd talked to her on the phone the other day, and was filled with a pure, simple pleasure of Nick coming home after a long trip away. She smiled joyously at him. "Hi yourself." She went to step forward toward him, and Nick stepped back. It seemed involuntary, as if she were an unpleasant insect. His eyes were blank, and they seemed to be fixed on her forehead. "How are you?" he said. His tone was the frosty one he used when he was being mucked about by incompetent tradespeople.
"Mom! You should have seen the wave I caught today. It was like 20 feet tall. It was like as high as the roof there. Look, no, look, Mum, at the roof there. Yeah, there. That's how high it was. Or maybe a few centimeters less. Anyway, Dad took the best photo. Show Mum the photo on your camera, Dad. Can you show her the photo?"
So this was Tom. He was wearing long board shorts and a cap that he pulled off so he could rub the top of his head hard. His hair was the same color as Olivia's, so blonde it was almost white. Nick had that color hair when he was a child. Tom's limbs were skinny and tanned and strong. He was like a miniature surfy teenager. Good Lord, he had Roger's nose. It was definitely Roger's nose. It made her want to laugh. Roger's nose in this vibrant little boy's face. She wanted to hug him, but she wasn't sure if that was appropriate. Instead, she said, "Yeah, let me see the photo, Nick." Nick and Tom stared at her. Her tone must have been wrong. Too flippant? Tom said,
"You sound a bit funny, Mum. Did you get stitches at the hospital for your head?" "I asked Auntie Libby if it was a brain tumor, and she said it definitely was not. I did a lie detector test on her."
"It definitely was not a brain tumor," said Alice. "I just fell over."
"I'm starved to death," sighed Tom. "I'm making hamburgers for dinner." "No, I mean I'm starved right now."
"Oh." A girl walked up onto the veranda. She dropped a wet towel on the veranda, put her hands on her hips, and said,
"Did you say you're making hamburgers for dinner?"
"Yes," said Alice. Madison, the Sultana, the two blue lines on all those pregnancy tests, the flashing heartbeat on the screen, the mysterious, invisible presence listening to Nick's voice through the toilet roll. Madison had very fair, almost translucent skin. There was a patch of angry red sunburn on her neck, with white fingerprints as if someone had given up on putting on the sunscreen too soon. She had lank, dark brown hair that was falling in her eyes, and beautiful, strong white teeth. Her eyes were the same shape as Nick's, but a darker, unusual color, and her eyebrows were someone's, Elizabeth's, as a child. They were subtly raised at the corners, like Mr. Spock. She wasn't adorable like Olivia and Tom. Her body was chunky. Her lower lip jutted out sulkily. "But one day," thought Alice, "one day I think you might be striking, my darling Sultana."
"You promised,"
the Sultana said to Alice. Her eyes were murderous. She was formidable. She filled Alice with awe.
"I promised what?"
"That you would buy the ingredients so I could make lasagna tonight. I knew you wouldn't do it. Why do you pretend you're going to do something when you know that you're not?"
She punctuated the last sentence with rhythmic stamps of her foot.
Nick said, "Don't be so rude, Madison. Your mother had an accident. She had to spend the night at the hospital."
Alice wanted to laugh at Nick's stern dad voice. Madison lifted her chin. Her eyes blazed. She stormed into the house, slamming the screen door behind her.
"Don't slam the door," called out Nick, "and come back and pick up your towel."
Silence. She didn't return. Nick sucked in his lower lip and his nostrils flared. Alice had never seen him pull a face like that. He said,
"Go inside, Tom. I want to speak to your mother. Will you take Madison's towel inside too?"
Tom was standing at the front wall of the house, tracing the brickwork with his fingertips. He said,
"Dad, how many bricks do you reckon there are in this whole house?" Tom.
Tom sighed theatrically, picked up Madison's towel, and went inside. Alice took a deep breath. She couldn't imagine living with those three children 24 hours a day. She'd never imagined them actually talking. They fizzed and crackled with energy. Their personalities were right there on the surface without that protective sheen of adulthood. "They're Sultana," began Alice, but words eluded her. Madison could not be put into words.
"I beg your pardon," said Nick.
"The Sultana. I could never have imagined her growing up to be like that. She's so... I don't know."
"Sultana?"
He didn't know what she was talking about. "You remember, when I was pregnant with Madison, we used to call her the Sultana?" He frowned.
"I don't remember that. Anyway, I wanted to see if we could work out this thing with Christmas Day."
"Oh, that." She thought of all those nasty emails and got a bad taste in her mouth. "Why are we even talking about Christmas now? It's May." He stared at her as if she were crazy.
"I beg your pardon. You're the one obsessed with your precious spreadsheet. You said you wanted everything in black and white for the whole year ahead. Every birthday, every concert. You said that was best for the kids."
"Did I? Did she even know how to do a spreadsheet?"
"Yes."
"Right. Well, whatever you want. You can have them on Christmas Day."
"Whatever I want," he repeated suspiciously, almost nervously. "Is there something I'm missing here?"
"Nope." "Hey, how was Portugal?"
"It was fine, thank you," he said formally.
She had to clench her fingernails into her hands to stop herself leaning forward and laying her face against his chest. She wanted to say, "Talk in your normal voice."
"I'd better go," he said.
"What?" She nearly grabbed for him in a panic.
"No, you can't go. You have to stay for dinner."
"I don't think that would be appropriate."
"Oh, yes, Daddy, stay for dinner."
It was Olivia. She had a red cape tied around her shoulders and a toy stethoscope around her neck. She clung to Nick's arm. Alice was jealous she was allowed to touch him so freely.
"I think I'd better go," said Nick.
"Please stay," said Alice. "We're having hamburgers."
"Yes, see, Mummy wants you to stay."
Olivia was doing a tap dance of delight back and forth across the veranda. She yelled,
"Tom, guess what? Dad's staying for dinner."
"Jesus, Alice," said Nick under his breath, and this time he looked her properly in the eyes.
"I opened some really nice wine for us," said Alice, and smiled at him. She didn't need lipstick to get her husband back. Chapter 20 Nick didn't seem to know what to do with himself when he came inside. He shoved his hands in the pockets of his shorts and wandered around the living room, stopping and looking at things as if he were in somebody else's home.
"You got the pool under control?"
he asked, and jutted his chin toward the backyard. Alice stood in the kitchen, pouring them both a glass of wine. She had no idea what he was talking about. "How do you get a pool under control?" "The pool has been very calm," she said. "Very serene. I think I must have it on a tight leash." Nick turned back from the windows and looked at her sharply.
"Good," he said.
Alice walked out of the kitchen and handed him a glass of wine. She noticed that he took it from her carefully so that their hands didn't touch.
"Thanks," he said.
She kept standing in front of him and he backed away again as if she were contagious. Tom was wandering around the kitchen, opening cupboard doors. He stood in front of the fridge, swinging the door back and forth.
"What can I eat, Mum?" he said.
Alice looked around vaguely for her mother.
"Mum!" said Tom.
Alice jumped. She was the mum.
"Well," she said, trying to sound cheery and loving, "what do you feel like? Maybe a sandwich?"
"You can wait till dinner, Tom," said Nick.
Oh, so that had been the correct response.
"Yes," she said. She put on a similar tone to Nick's. "Your father is right." Then she giggled. She couldn't help it. She gave Nick a mischievous look. Didn't he find it funny too? the two of them being the mum and the dad? Nick just looked back at her nervously. She saw his eyes dart involuntarily to her glass of wine. Did he think she was drunk? The little boy slammed the fridge door so hard it rattled and said,
I think if I don't eat soon, I might get malnourished. Look, my stomach is sticking out like a starving person. See?
He thrust out his stomach. Alice laughed. Nick said sharply, Stop being silly. Go and get changed out of those wet clothes. Yes, well, it probably wasn't the best idea to encourage your children to laugh at the plight of the starving. The littlest child appeared. Olivia. She had smeared her lips with bright red lipstick. It had got on her teeth. Was that allowed? Alice looked over at Nick for guidance, but he was standing at the back door and looking out at the pool. The colour looks a bit green to me, he said. When was the last time you had the guy around?
Okay, Mummy. I'm ready now to be your nurse. Sit down and I'll take your temperature.
Olivia grabbed her by the hand. Charmed by the feel of her small, warm palm, Alice let herself be led over to the sofa.
Lie down, there's a dear, said Olivia.
Alice lay down and Olivia stuck a toy thermometer in her mouth. She stroked back Alice's hair from her forehead and said,
Now I will listen to your heart, patient.
She plugged the stethoscope to her ears and pressed the other end against Alice's chest. She frowned professionally. Alice tried not to laugh. This kid was adorable.
Okay, patient, your heart is beating, she said.
Phew, said Alice.
Olivia removed the thermometer and looked at it. Her mouth dropped.
You have a terrible fever, patient. You're burning up.
Oh, no. What should I do?
You should watch me do a cartwheel. That will cure you.
Olivia did a perfect cartwheel. Alice applauded and Olivia bowed. She went to do another one.
Not in the house, Olivia, snapped Nick. You know that.
Olivia stuck her bottom lip out.
Please, Daddy, please, just one more.
Should she be wearing your lipstick like that? Asked Nick.
Oh, well, said Alice, I'm not exactly sure.
Let your mother get dinner started.
Nick had the same exhausted, defeated look as Elizabeth had the night before. Everyone was so tired and cranky in 2008.
Sorry, darling Daddy.
Olivia threw her arms around Nick's legs.
Go and get changed out of your swimming costume, said Nick.
Olivia danced off, swirling her red cape around her. They were alone.
By the way, I didn't get all of Olivia's homework done, said Nick.
He sounded defensive, like he was confessing something.
You mean you do Olivia's homework for her? Asked Alice.
Of course not. Jesus. You really do think I'm incompetent, don't you?
Alice sat up.
No, I don't. She's only got 8 questions to go. It's obviously more difficult when you're all together in a small apartment. Also, we didn't quite finish Tom's reading, and we spent 3 hours doing Madison's science experiment today. Tom wanted to do it for her.
Nick. He stopped talking, took a mouthful of his wine, and looked at her.
What?
Why are we getting a divorce?
What sort of question is that?
I just want to know. The longing to stand up and touch him was so strong, she had to press her hands against her thighs to stop herself from leaping up and burying her head under his chin.
It doesn't matter why we're getting a divorce, said Nick. I'm not having this conversation. What's the point of it? I'm not interested in playing games tonight, Alice. I'm exhausted. If you're trying to make me say something you can use against me, it's not going to work.
Oh, said Alice. Would her capacity for shock ever run out? She realized that ever since Elizabeth had first uttered the word divorce at the hospital, she'd been waiting to see Nick so that he could take it away, make it nothing to do with them.
Maybe I should just go home, said Nick, putting his glass down on the coffee table.
You told me once that if we were ever having trouble with our relationship, you would move heaven and earth to try and fix it, said Alice. We were at that new Italian restaurant when you said that. We were peeling the wax off the candlestick. I remember it very, very clearly.
Alice.
You said we were going to get old and grumpy together and go on coach tours and play bingo. The garlic bread was cold, but we were too hungry to complain. Nick's lower lip had dropped, so he looked stupid. One night, we were standing in Sarah O'Brien's driveway, waiting for a taxi, and I asked if you thought Sarah looked even more beautiful than usual that night, and you said, "Alice, I could never love anyone the way I love you." And I laughed and said, "That wasn't the question, but it was the question because I was feeling insecure." And that's what you said. You said that. It was cold. You were wearing that big woolly jumper that you lost at Katoomba. Don't you remember? She could feel her nose starting to block. Nick was holding his palms up in a panicky fashion, as if there were a fire starting right in front of him, but he couldn't see anything handy to extinguish it. Alice sniffed noisily. "Sorry," she said, and looked at the floor, because she couldn't bear to look at his familiar but strange face. She said, "These tiles are the absolute perfect color. Where did we get them?" "I don't know," said Nick. "It must have been 10 years ago." She looked back up at him. He dropped his hands by his sides, and his eyes widened as comprehension swept his face. He said, "Alice, you did get your memory back, didn't you? I just assumed, I mean, you're home from the hospital. You don't still think it's 1998, do you?" "I know it's 2008. I believe it. It just doesn't feel like it." "Yes, but you remember the last 10 years, don't you? That's not why you're asking these bizarre questions, is it?" Alice said, "Did you have an affair with that woman who lived across the road? The one who died? Gina?" "An affair with Gina? You are joking." "Oh, good." He said, "You don't remember Gina?" "No, I remember the balloons at her funeral." "But Alice..." Nick leaned forward urgently. He looked around the room to make sure they were alone and lowered his voice. "You do remember the kids, don't you?" Alice met his eyes and silently shook her head. "Not at all. The last thing I remember properly is being pregnant with the Sultana. I mean, Madison." Nick slammed his palms against his knees. He had all these new grown-up grumpy gestures. "For God's sake, why aren't you still at the hospital?" "Did you have an affair with someone other than Gina?" asked Alice. "What? No, of course not." "Did I?" "Not that I know of. Can we get back to the point?" "So there were no affairs at all?" "No, Jesus, we didn't have time for affairs. We didn't have the energy." "Well, I didn't." "Maybe you did, in between your precious aerobics classes and beautician appointments, in which case, good luck to you." Alice thought about how she'd kissed Dominic. She said, "Do you have a girlfriend now?" "Oh, don't answer that. I can't bear it if you've got a girlfriend. Don't answer it." She put her hands over her ears, took them away, and said, "Do you?" Nick said, "You must have hit your head really hard, Alice." For a moment, it seemed like the real Nick was back. He was shaking his head in comical disbelief, the way he did when he caught her crying over that margarine ad with the ducklings, or hopping around swearing because she'd hurt herself kicking the washing machine, or down on her knees frenziedly pulling everything out of the fridge in the hope of finding a forgotten bar of chocolate. Then the look vanished as if he'd just recalled something highly irritating, and he said, "Anyway, according to Olivia, you've got a boyfriend yourself. Jasper's dad. The school principal, no less. Do you remember him?" Her face became warm. "I didn't remember him, but I met him yesterday." "Right," said Nick testily. "Well, he sounds very nice. Think I remember him from the school. Tall, lanky bloke. Anyway, so glad everything is working out well for you. The question is, are you well enough to look after the children tonight, or should they come back with me?" Alice said, "If neither of us had an affair, why aren't we still together? What could be bad enough to break us up?" Nick exhaled noisily. He looked around the room in a flabbergasted way, as if looking for guidance from an equally flabbergasted audience. "It seems to me like this is a pretty serious head injury. I can't believe they let you leave the hospital." "They did a CT scan. There's nothing physically wrong with me. Also, I sort of told them I had my memory back." Nick's eyes rose to the heavens, another pompous new gesture. Oh, great. Brilliant. Lie to the doctors. Well done, Alice. Why are you being so mean to me? What are we, 5 now? I'm not being mean to you. You are, and you don't even sound like yourself. You've got all sarcastic and cliched and ordinary. Thank you. Thank you so much. Cliched and ordinary. Yes, it's such a great mystery why our marriage has ended. He looked around with a triumphant jeer for his invisible audience again, as if to say, see what I have to put up with? I'm sorry, said Alice. I didn't mean... She drifted off because she was remembering what it was like when you broke up with someone. Conversations became so hopelessly tangled. You had to be polite and precise. You couldn't safely criticize anymore because you didn't have the right. You'd lost your immunity. Oh, Nick, she said helplessly. She was experiencing all those familiar symptoms of a relationship breakup. The nausea, the sensation of something huge and hard lodged in the center of her chest. That trembly, teary feeling. She wasn't supposed to ever have to feel this way again. Breakups were meant to be something from her youth. Painful memories. Actually, not that painful, because it was sort of nice to look fondly back at her younger self and think, oh, you silly thing, crying over that jerk. This was meant to be her grown-up relationship, the one that lasted forever. She put her wine glass on the coffee table and turned to face him. Just tell me why we're getting a divorce. Please. That's an impossible question to answer. There are a million reasons, and you'd probably give a million different reasons. Well, just sort of sum it up. In 25 words or less. Yes, please. He smiled slightly, and it was the real Nick again. He kept appearing and disappearing. He said, well, I guess... And then he stopped and bowed his head. Oh, Alice. An expression of pure misery crossed his face. It was too much for Alice. Her instinct was to comfort him, and she wanted to be comforted herself. And it was Nick, for heaven's sake. She launched herself across the room and into his arms and buried her face in his chest, breathing in deeply. It was still Nick. He still smelled exactly like himself. Whatever went wrong, we'll fix it, she babbled. We'll get counseling. We'll go on a nice holiday somewhere, she was inspired. With the children. They can come too. Our children. How fun would that be? Or we'll just hang around here, swim in the pool. The pool. I love the pool. How did we ever afford that? I guess with your new job. Do you like the job? I couldn't believe it. You've got your own personal assistant. She wasn't very nice to me, but that's okay. I don't mind. Alice. He wasn't hugging her back. The words kept tumbling out of her mouth. She could talk her way out of this. I'm skinny, aren't I? I might even be too skinny. What do you think? How did I get so skinny? Did I give up chocolate? I can't find any chocolate in the whole house. My password is oregano. Weird. Hey, why isn't Mrs. Bergen talking to me? Did I offend her? Elizabeth seems mad at me too. But you still love me, don't you? You must still love me. Stop it. He held onto her shoulders and pushed her gently away. Because we have 3 children, and I still love you. No, Alice. He shook his head sternly, as if she were a toddler about to touch an electrical socket. What are you two fighting about this time? Alice and Nick turned to see Madison leaning against the doorframe. She must have had a shower. She was wearing a dressing gown. Her face was scrubbed, and her hair was wet, pulled back from her face. Oh, you look so beautiful, said Alice involuntarily. Madison's face changed, became ugly with rage. Why do you always say such stupid, retarded things? Madison, boomed Nick, do not speak to your mother like that. Well, she is. Anyway, I heard you say to Auntie Ella that Mum was a hard bitch, so why are you pretending to like her? I know you hate her. Alice caught her breath. I do not hate your mother, said Nick. Alice could see tension pulling the skin around his mouth tight. He looked so old. You do so hate her, said Madison. He does not hate Mum. It was Tom. He punched Madison in the arm. I hate you. Tom, snapped Nick. Ow! Madison clutched her arm, her knees collapsed beneath her, and she fell in a heap on the floor.
He hit me! You're not meant to hit girls. That's domestic violence. That is violence against women.
You're not a woman, sneered Tom. You're just a stupid girl. Madison kicked viciously at Tom's leg. Tom threw back his head and howled. He looked at Alice, his face bright red and filled with righteous fury.
Mum, did you see how hard she kicked me? I only punched her a little bit.
A little bit? Madison pulled up the sleeve of her dressing gown.
What's that?
That is a mark. There will be a bruise, a huge bruise. Goodness, breathed Alice. She picked up her wine glass and looked around for some grown-up to take control. I think I should go, said Nick.
Are you kidding? Said Alice. You can't leave me with them.
Madison and Tom now appeared to be trying to kill each other. They were wrestling like rabid cats on the floor. There was kicking, hair-pulling, and ear-piercing screams of rage. It was remarkable.
Do they do this a lot? Asked Alice.
She stuck her fingers in her ears. Maybe it wouldn't be so much fun to go on holidays with them. Nick laughed, a surprised guffaw that he stopped short. Alice said, Did you really tell Ella I was a hard bitch? She paused.
Am I a hard bitch?
Nick walked over to the children and grabbed the back of Tom's t-shirt in one hand. He wrenched him up in the air and carried him over to the couch and dropped him. Then he turned back to Madison and said, Go to your room.
Me? But he started it. He punched me first. That's not justice. Mom!
Madison sat upright, her back against the wall, and looked at Alice imploringly. At that moment, Olivia came running into the room, wearing only a t-shirt and underpants dotted with pictures of strawberries.
Mummy, where are my shorts? I mean the denim ones. And don't say, have I looked in the drawer? Because yes, I have looked, and yes, actually, I did use my eyes.
She pirouetted on the spot with her arms held gracefully above her head. You're very good at that, said Alice, glad of the distraction.
Yes, I am pretty good, sighed Olivia, as if it were quite a responsibility.
She lifted one skinny brown leg and admired her pointed toe. A thought struck her.
Mum, who is going to take me to the family talent night concert at Franny's retirement city? You or Daddy? Which house will I be sleeping in?
I'm not exactly sure, said Alice. We only sleep at Dad's place on weekends. Madison looked sharply at Alice. Olivia's concert is on Wednesday night, right?
Well, that must be right then, Madison, said Alice. I'm so hungry, sighed Tom from the couch. When is dinner? Mom? Excuse me, please. When is dinner? I think my blood sugar has dropped.
Okay, Tom. Why are you saying our names all the time? Interrupted Madison.
Oh, sorry. I'm just sorry.
Madison said, You don't remember us, do you? Tom sat up straight on the couch and Olivia stopped twirling. She doesn't even know who we are, Madison told them. Chapter 21 Alice pursed her lips together in the manner of a stern, distracted mother and tried not to let the panic show.
Of course I know who you are, she said to Madison. Don't be silly. How could Mum not remember us?
Olivia put her hands on her hips and stuck her stomach out.
Madison, what does that mean?
Madison gave her a bored, superior look.
Mum fell over and hit her head at the gym. I heard Auntie Libby telling Uncle Ben she'd lost 10 years of her memory. Well, guess what? We weren't born 10 years ago.
Yes, but so she still knows who we are. We're her children.
Olivia seemed both agitated and excited. Okay, why don't you kids watch some TV, said Nick, or PlayStation. And maybe it's time you stopped eavesdropping on grown-up conversations, Madison.
I was not eavesdropping. I was just there, in the kitchen, getting some juice out of the fridge. What am I meant to do, walk around like this?
She stuck her fingers in her ears.
Amnesia, said Tom. It's called amnesia. Is that what you've got, Mum?
Your mother is perfectly fine, said Nick.
Mum, said Tom.
We'll do a test, said Madison. Ask her some questions.
Like what? Said Olivia.
I know. Tom put his hand up as if he were in school. I know.
Okay, Mum. What's my favorite food?
French fries, said Nick. Now that's enough.
That's wrong, cried Tom. It's chicken schnitzel,
sometimes, or otherwise sushi. Well, there you go. I've got amnesia too. Now that's enough.
My favorite food is chicken schnitzel too, commented Olivia.
It is not, said Tom. Think of your own thing. You copy every single thing I do.
What's my teacher's name, Mum? Said Madison. Now that's enough, repeated Nick.
Oh, I know that one.
Alice managed to stop herself from putting her hand up. She'd seen a notice on the fridge door about a Year 5 excursion with a teacher's name on it.
Mrs. Holloway. I mean, Alloway.
Holloway? Something like that. There was an ominous silence.
Mrs. Holloway is the deputy principal, said Madison quietly in the tone of one pointing out an incredibly foolish, potentially dangerous mistake.
Oh, yes, of course, that's what I meant, said Alice humbly.
You didn't, said Madison.
When's my birthday, Mum?
Asked Tom, and he pointed a warning finger at his father. Don't you answer for her.
Right. Nick clapped his hands together and made a loud, hollow sound. Your mother had an accident, and she's a bit muddled about some things, that's all. She needs you all to be extra helpful and extra quiet. She doesn't need you interrogating her. So I want all three of you setting the table now.
Olivia came and stood beside Alice and slipped a hand in hers. She whispered,
You know that my birthday is 20th June, don't you?
Of course I do, darling, said Alice. And suddenly she felt like a mother. That's the day you were born. I could never, ever forget that.
She looked up and saw Madison standing in the hallway staring at her with fierce concentration.
You're lying, she said.
Elizabeth's homework for Dr. Hodges. Dear Dr. Hodges, you know what? I'm going to give in and call you by your first name. I was remembering today how you made such a point of it at our first session.
Jeremy, you said firmly each time I said Dr. Hodges.
You probably don't like your name. I don't blame you. Hodges is a plump, greasy name, and you're not plump and greasy. You're actually quite good looking, which I find distracting. Your nice looks keep reminding me that you're a real person. And I don't want you to be a real person. Real people don't have the answers. They make mistakes. They say things with great authority, and they're wrong. But anyway, whatever. I'm officially taking you off your pedestal. How are you anyway, Jeremy? What are you doing this Sunday night? Are you drinking red wine with your pretty, fertile wife while she prepares a roast dinner, and you help those fair-haired kids with their homework? Is the house warm and toasty and smelling of garlic and rosemary? There is no roast dinner in the oven here. There is no conversation. There is only the sound of the television. There is always the sound of the television. I can't stand to turn it off. I can't stand the silence. Couldn't we just play some music? Ben says. No. I want TV. I want gunshots and canned laughter and dog food commercials. Nothing seems too tragic when the television is blaring. I lived for 2 years without a television when I was in my 20s. How did I do that? Now it's like a narcotic. So, what did I want to tell you? Oh, yes. Ben, we're fighting. On the way home from Alice's place today, Ben started telling me about some man he'd met at last night's party. I'd seen them talking while I was chatting with Alice's new boyfriend, who, by the by, is sweet and awkward. It made me feel a bit weird, as if I was being unfaithful to Nick, but I liked him. Anyway, I thought, oh good, Ben's found someone to talk about cars. But no. They were talking about infertility and adoption. Suddenly, Ben is the sort of guy who reveals details of his personal life to strangers at kindergarten cocktail parties. I've had him wrong all these years. He's not the silent, strong, damaged type at all. Oh no! This guy's sister went through 11 failed IVF cycles before adopting a baby girl from Thailand, and the little girl is a talented violin player, and they all lived happily ever after. Ben got this woman's number. He's going to call her. My husband has a zealous new look in his eyes. It's as if he's discovered religion or golf. Mr. Never Ever Adopt has become Mr. I Can't Wait to Adopt. I asked how many years it took, but Ben didn't know. I changed the subject. Then tonight, we're watching the news and they're showing the cyclone in Burma. There was a woman wearing a red dress, a bit like Alice's. She was standing in front of a pile of rubble that had once been her daughter's school. She had a photo of a solemn-faced girl. She looked about Olivia's age. The mother talked politely in good English to the reporter and explained that the local authorities were doing everything they could. She seemed fine, almost businesslike. The camera moved away. Then it came back, and now the mother was writhing on the ground, wailing and biting her knuckles. The reporter explained that she'd just heard that there would be no further rescues from the school because it was too dangerous. I was eating corn chips and watching a woman experiencing the worst moment of her life. I have no right to be sad about anything. No right to have therapy from expensive doctors like you for losing children who never existed. There is real grief in the world. There are real mothers losing real children. I make myself sick. And that's when Ben said, "Lots of children must have lost their parents." He said it solemnly, but also with a definite hint of cheer, as in, "Hey, how handy. Lots of dead parents. Lots of spare kids up for grabs. Maybe a cute little violin player is crawling out of the rubble right now. Jesus." I said, "Yes, isn't this cyclone great?" He said, "Don't be like that." And suddenly I was screaming, "I would have adopted. I would have. I would have. But you said no. You said you were psychologically damaged by being adopted. You said..." And he interrupted and said, "I never, ever used the word psychologically damaged." Which is true, but he implied it. I said, "You did so." I mean, he might as well have said it, Jeremy. He said, "Bullshit." I really hate that word. He knows that. And it doesn't even make sense. A bull's shit. Then he said, and this is the kicker, Jeremy. He said, "I thought it was you who didn't want to adopt." After my head stopped exploding, I said, "Why would you think that?" He said, "Whenever people asked us about it, you'd get so angry with them. You'd say we want our own biological child." I said, "But I was saying that because of you, because you'd been so against it in the beginning." He said, "I was against it, but then after we kept losing the pregnancies, it seemed the obvious thing to do. But I didn't want to bring it up because the idea seemed to upset you so much." So there you go. How's that for great communication in a marriage? It reminds me of that television show where they investigate airplane crashes. Sometimes a major disaster happens because of the tiniest, most stupid error. I said, "Anyway, it's too late now." He said, "It's not." I said, "I'm not adopting. I'm too tired." It's true, Jeremy. It has occurred to me recently that for the last few years, I have been in a permanent state of tiredness. I'm so tired of trying and trying and trying. I don't have anything left. I'm done. I would like to go to sleep for a year or two. I said, "We're not going to be parents. It's over." And after a while of him munching corn chips, energetically grinding them with his teeth like a guinea pig, he said, "So, are we just going to sit around and watch TV for the rest of our lives?" And I said, "Suits me." He got up and left the room. Now we're not talking. I haven't seen him since, but I know when he comes back, we won't talk. Or if we do, we'll talk very, very politely and coldly, which is the same as not talking. Right now, I feel nothing. Nothing at all. A huge, empty, endless nothing that I'm filling up with corn chips and Australia's funniest home videos. Chapter 22. The Love family was sitting around the dinner table. There had been an awkward moment when Alice went to sit in Olivia's place, but Nick saved her by jerking his chin at the place opposite. The children had become wriggly and giggly, almost as if they were drunk. They seemed unable to sit still. They were sliding off their chairs, constantly knocking cutlery onto the floor, and talking in high-pitched voices over the top of one another. Alice didn't know if this was normal behavior or not. It wasn't exactly relaxing. Nick had his jaw clenched as if this dinner were a horrible medical procedure he had to endure.
"I knew you wouldn't remember that you promised I could make lasagna,"
Madison poked disgustedly at her hamburger.
"She's got amnesia, stupid,"
said Tom thickly, his mouth amazingly full.
"Manners,"
said Alice automatically, and then caught herself. Did she just say manners? What did that even mean? "Oh, yeah," said Madison. She turned her dark eyes on Alice. "Sorry." "That's okay," Alice said, and dropped her eyes first. The kid could be sort of scary.
"What's for dessert, Mummy?"
said Olivia. She was kicking the table leg rhythmically as she ate.
"Maybe ice cream? Or, I know, chocolate mush?"
"What's chocolate mush?" asked Alice.
"Oh, silly, you know that,"
said Olivia. Tom slapped his hand against his forehead.
"You girls, she's got amnesia."
"Mummy, darling,"
said Olivia,
"is it gone now, your am thing? Because maybe you could take an aspirin. I could get it for you. I could get it for you now."
She pushed her chair back from the table. "Eat your dinner, Olivia," said Nick.
"Daddy," groaned Olivia, "I'm trying to help."
"As if an aspirin's going to help," said Tom. "She probably needs an operation, like brain surgery, by a brain surgeon. I saw a brain surgeon on television the other night."
He brightened.
"Hey, I would like to dissect a mouse and see its brain as well as its intestines with a scalpel. That would be excellent."
"Oh my God!"
Madison put down her knife and fork and put her head on the table.
"That is making me sick. I am so going to be sick."
"Stop it," said Nick.
"This is a mouse's brain, Madison." Tom squished his fork into his hamburger meat. "Chop, chop, chop, mousey's brain."
"Make him stop,"
wailed Madison.
"Tom," sighed Nick.
"So," said Alice, "how is the aquatic center today?" Madison lifted her head from the table and said to Alice, "Did you remember that you and Dad were getting a divorce after you hit your head? Did you remember that?" Nick made a strangled, helpless sound. Alice considered the question.
"No,"
she said, "I didn't." No one spoke. Olivia banged her knife against her plate. Tom twisted his arm over and frowned ferociously at something on his elbow. There were spots of crimson on Madison's cheekbones.
"So, do you still love Dad?"
said Madison. There was a slight tremor in her voice. She sounded much younger.
"Alice," said Nick warningly, at the same time as Alice said,
"Yes, of course I do."
"Can Daddy come home then?"
Olivia looked up, elated.
"And sleep in his own bed again?"
"Okay, time for a change of subject," said Nick. He avoided Alice's eyes. "They'd fight too much," said Tom.
"What do we fight about?" asked Alice, greedy for facts. "Oh, I don't know," said Tom irritably.
"You said that's why you couldn't live together anymore, because you fight too much. Even though I still have to live with my stupid sisters, and we fight all the time, so it wasn't even logical."
"You fight about Gina," said Madison.
"Don't talk about Gina," said Olivia. "It makes me sad. It's an absolute tragedy."
"R.I.P., said Tom. "That's what you say when you talk about someone who has died. It means rest in peace. You have to say it whenever you hear their name."
"Why did we fight about Gina?" asked Alice.
"R.I.P.,"
cried Tom as if he was saying, "Snap."
"So the aquatic center was a lot of fun," said Nick. "Wasn't it, kids?"
"Well," said Madison, "I think Dad thought you liked Gina better than him."
"R.I.P.,"
shouted Tom and Olivia.
"Oh, shut up," said Madison. "Someone dying is not funny."
Alice looked at Nick. His face looked red and raw, like windburn. She couldn't tell whether it meant he was angry or embarrassed. Goodness, had she had some sort of torrid lesbian affair with Gina?
"You fight about the American Express a lot," said Tom.
"American Express," said Madison. American Expense works for me. Nick lifted his wine glass in a mocking sort of salute, but he still didn't look at Alice.
Once you had a really extremely big fight about me, said Olivia with satisfaction.
Why? Asked Alice.
Oh, you remember.
Olivia looked wary.
That day at the beach.
For the 20 billionth time, she doesn't remember, said Tom.
Olivia got lost, said Madison. The police came. You were crying. She gave Alice a malicious look. Like this.
Olivia, Olivia, my daughter, where is my daughter?
She buried her face in her hands and pretended to sob dramatically. Did I? Alice felt ridiculously hurt by Madison's act.
Just in case you were wondering, said Madison, Olivia is your favorite child.
Your mother doesn't have favorites, said Nick. Did she? She hoped not. When I was pregnant with you, Madison, said Alice, your dad and I called you the Sultana. Did you know that? Because you were as tiny as a Sultana.
You never told me that. Madison looked doubtful.
What did you call me?
Asked Olivia. Really? I never told you that? Said Alice. Madison turned to Nick.
Is that true? Did you call me the Sultana?
Your dad spoke to you through a toilet roll on my tummy, said Alice. He said, Ahoy there, Sultana! It's me, your father! Madison smiled. Alice stared. It was the most exquisite smile she had ever seen. She felt a shot of love so powerful it hurt her chest. She looked down at her plate and a memory dropped straight into her head. She was in a car filled with gold filmy light. There was a smell of salt and seaweed. Her neck hurt. She turned around to check the baby. Miracle. She was asleep. Fat pink cheeks, long lashes, her head lolling against the side of the car seat. As Alice watched, a bar of light fell across her face. Her eyes fluttered open and she yawned and stretched sleepily. Then she caught sight of Alice and her whole face lit up with a huge surprised grin as if to say, Hey, I can't believe it. You're here too. There was a sudden loud, rumbling snore from the driver's seat and the baby looked startled. It's okay, said Alice. It's just Daddy. The baby wouldn't sleep. Alice looked at Nick. She wouldn't sleep unless we were driving. Nick kept shoveling food into his mouth and looked straight ahead. Alice stared at Madison and blinked. The angry, strange little girl at the table was the baby. The giggling baby in the car was the Sultana. We drove all through the night, said Alice to Madison. Every time we stopped, you screamed. I know, said Madison. She was sullen again. And you drove me all the way to Manly, and you stopped in the car park, and you and Daddy and me all fell asleep in the car, and then you took me on the beach, and I rolled over for the first time. Whatever.
Yes, said Alice excitedly. She remembered. The baby rolled over on the picnic rug. We got takeaway coffees from that place with a blue awning, and toasted ham and cheese sandwiches.
It felt like yesterday, and it felt like a million years ago.
I slept through the night when I was 8 weeks old, said Olivia. Didn't I, Mum? I was a gold star sleeper.
Just shh, said Alice, holding up her hand, trying to focus. She could see that morning so clearly. The baby's striped suit, Nick's unshaven face and red eyes. A seagull white and squawky against very blue sky. They were so tired they were lightheaded. The blessed feeling of the caffeine hitting her bloodstream. They were parents. They were filled with the wonder and the horror, the bliss and the exhaustion of being parents.
Mummy, whined Olivia.
If she remembered that day, she should be able to feel her way back to when Madison was born. And she should be able to feel her way forward to the day that Nick packed his bags and left.
Mummy,
said Olivia again.
Oh, please be quiet.
She groped about in the dark, but there was nothing else. All she had was that morning. But Nick, she began.
What? He said grimly, irritably. He really didn't like her. It wasn't just that he didn't love her anymore.
He didn't even like her.
We were so happy.